Tim Dillon cracked me up last week. He dropped an extra episode of his podcast just to dispute a report in the New York Post. From the New York Post, don't be surprised if you spot comedian slash podcast king Tim Dillon milling about the East End this summer with a mocktail in hand. I don't know who wrote this. Tim ripped this to shreds. First of all, podcast king Tim Dillon. I'm a fan of his podcast. His podcast does, you know, pretty well. He's making good coin off it, apparently. But podcast king, he pointed out that he is not the podcast king. I'm also having trouble picturing Tim Dillon walking around with a mocktail. The post continues, Dillon once called the heir apparent to countercultural greats like George Carlin. Time out. Who said that? Now, if I want to go lawyer here, once called the heir apparent, maybe once some human being said that, but it's not like people are calling Tim Dillon the next George Carlin. I'm a Tim Dillon fan. He is hilarious. You should listen to his podcast. And I've said before, eventually he's going to step on a landmine and I'm going to have to deny that I ever told you to listen to his podcast. But until that day comes, it's a very funny podcast. You should listen to it. The heir to George Carlin, let's tap the brakes a little, people. Tap the brakes. I think Tim would agree with that. Tap the brakes. The Post reported, Tim recently closed on a $3.98 million Southampton home just in time for Memorial Day weekend. Tim went out of his way on the podcast. I listened to it 2 days ago. I think he said he paid $2 million for it, not $4 million. So he was criticizing the Post in a very funny manner. Go back and listen to the episode of the Tim Dillon podcast. So he pushed back on the $4 million notion. The former child actor who surprisingly got his start on Sesame Street doing the polka with Snuffleupagus. What? He did say that that part was true. Started doing comedy in 2008. He disagreed with their date there. Tim Dillon, named a pandemic breakout comedy star by The Post, said he's comfortable with dark comedy on both sides of the political spectrum. They pulled out an old quote that he apparently gave The Post, which was, I don't shy away from the realities of what's going on. I was saying this a while ago. Society's held together by duct tape and a lot of these fragile mechanisms are starting to break down. I have found a way to make that funny. Yes, he has. The Post said he just completed a whirlwind comedy tour from France to Italy to all the major cities in Australia. He was in Australia. He did podcasts from there. Tim Dillon denies that he has ever performed comedy in France and Italy, and he had some problems with that. The Post writes, the sober, funny man also owns homes in Beverly Hills and Austin. Tim says he does not own a home in Beverly Hills, but he does own one in Austin. Next on his list is Manhattan, where he once worked as a tour guide. Why does this article even exist? Oh, yeah, there's a new Norm Macdonald special on Netflix today. I probably should have put that at the top. Anyway, new Norm Macdonald special on Netflix today. From Vulture, they interviewed Robbie Praw. Robbie is the head of Netflix comedy. It is a very, very good article. I shared it on the subreddit Daily Comedy News and on the Facebook group page. Now, I shared this back on Thursday, so you might have to dig. That page is Daily Comedy News Podcast Group, or just go to Vulture. Robbie Praw was working in the programming department of Montreal's Just for Laughs Comedy Festival. I worked with him on a few festivals there. I doubt he'd remember me, but, you know, we were in the rooms together. And he rose to the ranks at JFL as VP of programming and developed deep relationships with some of comedy's biggest names before they were names at all, such as Ali Wong and Bo Burnham. This answer surprised me. He was asked about the Netflix Comedy Festival, which I think was a big hit last month. Are they going to have it again? Robbie said, I don't know. It was successful and we're really proud of it, but right now it's not built to be a yearly event. We certainly have interest in doing different things live in the future. That sucks. I was hoping that would become permanent. That seemed like it went really well. It's a lot of work and it's not Netflix's main business, but boy, I wish they would do that again. Vulture, something I've heard from comedians and managers is that stand-up proved to be really popular after people finished binging something serious. This next point is interesting. Bert Kreischer has talked about how Netflix told him that most people just watch the first 30 minutes. So he put his closer 30 minutes into a special. Can you confirm that, Robbie Praw? Robbie said, people do watch our specials, often all the way through. But you can go to any club around the country right now and see a big headliner do 90 minutes. Or you could see somebody do 7 minutes. And those are two very valid versions of the art form. That's a dodge, bro. Come on. You know that that's not the same thing. somebody doing a tight seven and somebody doing 90 minutes is completely different than Bert Kreischer pulling his closer up to the 30-minute mark. Robbie, that's a dodge. Come on, answer the question. Robbie said, sometimes you like a shorter version of something. Sometimes, rather than a comedian constructing an evening for you, a comedian's take on a specific thing may be a vital, important piece of comedy. We're striving to do both. Yeah, but did Bert Kreischer pull his closer 30 minutes into a special because there's some sort of metric telling him to do that? Answer the question, Robbie. A 7-minute set is by design a 7-minute set. A 90-minute set is something else. It ebbs and flows and changes speeds and has long narratives and has rat-a-tat-tat jokes. Moving your closer to the 30-minute mark is a major move. I want to know why. Vulture said, we've now entered to the Dave Chappelle part of the interview. Robbie said, oh, great. Vulture, Dave has put out 6 hours and 5 years on Netflix, plus 846 in those Instagram specials complaining about Chappelle's show and not getting paid enough. Chris Rock has released 5 hours in his entire career. Do you think all of Chappelle's hours were ready to release? Especially since it was leaked that these specials lose money for Netflix. That's the first I've heard of that. What a great question. Great job here, Vulture. Robbie Prawl said, I believe Dave is one of the most important stand-up comedians of all time. Certainly, he's the most popular stand-up comedian of the moment, and we're thrilled to have this partnership with him. His specials have been extremely well-received. I mean, I don't know how many Emmys, Grammys. He got the Mark Twain Award. Our members both love his specials and watch them in big numbers. They complete his specials in big numbers. Interesting. He has some of the highest Rotten Tomatoes scores. So yeah, we obviously work with Dave because Dave is one of the top regarded stand-up comedians of all time, and we definitely hope to continue working with him. If we felt like we were putting something on screen that was causing real-world harm, we wouldn't be putting it on screen. That being said, content of all kinds elicits reactions. That's why we all love art. This is a special, obviously, that had a lot of reactions to it, but in the end, I was fairly proud to work for a company that would allow important artists the ability to have creative expressions. Vulture followed up. Did the protests inform or expand your perspective on how these things are received or your own responsibility for them? Robbie Prawl said, I just really believe in the notion of creative expression, specifically when it comes to an artist like Dave Chappelle. I think it's really important that the person in my job is giving someone like Dave the ability to express himself. I'm proud that we stood by that. More from that article tomorrow. It's very good. All right, Daniel Feinberg in the Hollywood Reporter talked about Saturday Night Live. This is the story I just couldn't get to last week with all the Gervais stuff. Daniel Feinberg is my favorite critic. I won't say one of them. He is my favorite critic. I enjoy his podcast, TV's Top 5, that's called, and his work in the Hollywood Reporter. So he pointed out last season's SNL had 16 cast regulars and 5 featured players. At any time, 4 or 5 of them could be away shooting something else. Even then, whole weeks would go by where a familiar and often beloved performer would appear in the background of one sketch and never be spotted again. That's a long way of saying that even if you don't think the season 47 cast was the best in the show's history, it's a really good cast. He talked about the cast members leaving. McKinnon, in particular, is entirely irreplaceable. I agree. She's been everything you could want out of an SNL cast member. Delivering impressions like Hillary Clinton, Elizabeth Warren, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and Rudy Giuliani. Feinberg says, I know she isn't everybody's comedic flavor, but Aidy Bryant is close to McKinnon's equal on the irreplaceability scale. There, I will disagree with Daniel Feinberg, but he wrote she's deceptively versatile with her impressions, including her weirdly expert take on Ted Cruz. That is very good. She's a good and ego-free sketch performer, capable of wacky stuff and straight women material. Then there's poor Kyle Mooney. Somebody hit me up on Instagram. The Instagram is Daily Comedy News. Since this was a direct message, I won't say who sent this to me, but you know who you are and appreciate you. And this listener said, don't worry, Kyle Mooney did get his own cake for his SNL send-off. I had commented on this podcast that I didn't think Kyle got a sketch send-off, Daniel Feinberg wrote. Speaking about being everybody's flavor, Kyle Mooney specialized in weird and off-putting weekend update characters and post-1230 type sketches. The post-1230s are actually my favorite. And guess what? This Saturday Night Live format requires a few of those bizarre acquired tastes. Mooney's material, often delivered, he was one of the first SNL regulars to come out of a YouTube producer background. I didn't know that. And that sensibility was clear in much of what he did. Now, this stunned me. Kyle was on for 9 seasons, 185 episodes. I feel like I like Kyle Mooney, but 9 years stunned me because I'm trying to think of memorable Kyle Mooney sketches, and I can't really think of any. The only one that comes to mind is Baby Yoda, and I didn't find that funny. And then there's Pete Davidson. Love Pete Davidson. He's great for Casa Corner, but SNL is going to be just fine without Pete Davidson. I mean, just fine. Daniel with a good observation. He says, McKinnon, Bryant, Mooney, and Davidson will all be missed, but not by the same audiences, which is perfect. If you distribute the departing screen time to already breaking out veterans like Bowen Yang, who crushes, and some of the others, that's a good core right there. Alex Moffat does a lot of things well. It felt like he was a little forgotten this year. Yep. And it's well past time for SNL to get more out of Chris Redd and Melissa Villaseñor. I agree. James Austin Johnson, he broke out with his impressions. I didn't see him in too many other things. I like him a lot, and you need somebody to do Biden, so I guess he hangs around. Sarah Sherman had a couple good things. I feel like she was underutilized. What about poor Aristotle Athery? He disappeared, man. Like, I feel bad for the guy. I wonder if he'll be back because he did not get used much at all. And I thought he was good in a few things he was in. Daniel Feinberg hopes they use the Please Don't Destroy guys some more. I agree with that. If you want a couple of listens, Michael Che was on the Bill Simmons podcast, and a podcast called The Town spoke with James Andrew Miller, who has written several fantastic books, including one about SNL. And he spoke about this very subject. So check out Jim Miller on The Town and Michael Che on the Bill Simmons Show. Normally this week is pretty quiet, so I was happy that Vulture asked 9 comedians what they would produce with a Marvel-sized budget. I'll pick at these over the next few days. So here you go, comedian. You got a big budget. What do you want to make? Guy Branum came up with Guy Branum's Gay for Pay Palm Springs Takeover. I'm in. He said, I'm renting the city of Palm Springs and installing hidden cameras throughout the city for their Pride Weekend in November. The city of Palm Springs is run by Republicans, and they'll sell out a government for anything. I do my entire act as incidental conversations with strangers. I subject unaware gay guys to my observations about what's wrong with gay marriage or paper straws. But with the power and authority to run and manipulate the city of Palm Springs over the course of 4 days. Most of the time, an audience is just there for reaction shots, but in my special, the whole focus is the drama of the reaction shot. We follow these people on their journeys after they've experienced my joke when they're like, that fat guy would not shut up about Canada. But when we finally come to them and say, we signed this release, they're going to be worried that they don't look hot enough, so we're probably going to have to spend $20 to $30 million just going through and face-tuning people, making sure their ab definition looks right. For lesbians, making sure that their dogs look as good as possible. We might have to custom make a leather jumpsuit for me, and that would require a huge number of cows and a great amount of work. There's also the fact that I am astoundingly sweaty, and this is Palm Springs, so we're going to have to figure out some sort of space-age polymer that we can put inside that will wick away sweat. I'm going to have to be on constantly, so I'm going to have to participate in Kumail Nanjiani levels of physical preparation beforehand. We're going to need a team of people working on that front starting 6 or 9 months beforehand, except so much of my material relies on my persona. I can't get ripped. Otherwise, it would undermine who I am and fundamentally place into question the entire project of the leather bodysuit. I think IMAX is the only way to capture gay for pay Chris Hemsworth receiving a favor at the pool while I tell a joke about brunch in the background. We're also going to make 2 of your 3 Chris's be gay for pay for the weekend. Evans, Hemsworth, not Pratt, Pine if he wants to. I did go to law school myself, so I'd be doing a lot of the work in these contracts. Of course, contracts for sexual favors are highly illegal in the U.S., so I'd have to do a lot of this legal work in the Netherlands. Very, very funny. And that is your comedy news for today. Follow the show for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your shows. See you tomorrow.